In Roman numerals, the number 30 is XXX. In binary, it's written as 11110. The number 30 separated by two hyphens is used to indicate the end of a newspaper story. There are 30 upright stones that form the circle at Stonehenge. In bingo, the 30 ball is known as Dirty Gertie. The Beatles' White Album has 30 tracks. Judas betrayed Jesus for 30 silver coins. If you're calling Giannis Antetokounmpo, the country code for Greece is 30, and the minimum age to be a U.S. senator is 30. Why do we care? Because this is the 30th installment of the Godfathers of Podcasting, brought to you by MakeGoodFood.ca, NordVPN, Fight Me, Airvape, Just CBD, and Eyeglasses.com. Go to our website, GodfathersofPodcasting.com, and check out our sponsor page to learn more about all the special offers that are available just for you. My name is Johnny DeSilva, and it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you two men that never get the mute button in a debate. Because every word out of their mouths is pure liquid gold. Notorious D.I.D. Chris Tidwell and your bro Danny O. Gentlemen, how are we?
Yo, you know what else? Like Roman numerals, that XXX. It's my favorite movies too.
Oh yeah. Well, I was going to take 30 years for that intro to finish.
It's amazing, right?
And don't hate.
Can you guys remember what you did for your 30th? While he was doing that intro, I was thinking, what? I can't even remember, guy. I can't remember what I did for my 30th. That's always supposed to be a big deal, milestone shit.
I can't remember what I did 30 minutes ago.
I believe that.
That is some true shit.
How's it going, guys?
It has been a hectic week.
Yeah,
there's been a lot going on both personally and professionally. So I just want to start by talking about something of a sensitive subject that hit our family here at the Godfathers of Podcasting. A couple weeks ago, I talked to my bro, Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell, and he informed me of something off air. And then it sort of went somewhat public over the last few days. Tid, I don't know if you want me to mention this or if you want to speak on it, but it's up to you, man. Because I think that we need to inform the listeners, the viewers out there, what they can do in terms of support. Yeah. But do you want to speak to what's going on, or do you want me to do that?
No, it's a thing. I'm fine with it. As some of you may or may not know, most recently, I mean, everybody who listens to the show knows that I am I'm a very married man. And that is no secret. And as of recently, Thanksgiving weekend, to be precise, my wife was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. It kind of hit us out of nowhere, and you go through that initial shock and, you know, what are we going to do? And everybody's scrambling and you find yourself, thinking about a lot of different scenarios right out the gate, but you always have to remember that the best thing you can do is just kind of, for a lot of things in life, one thing that 2020 has taught us is that we just got to kind of assess, got to sit back, got to assess, and got to kind of let this stuff kind of handle itself, you know, naturally. There's reasons that we live in the country that we live in. There's reasons that we have the specialists that we do. And, so that's pretty much, you know, what's going on in my life right now. And all I can do is just be the biggest advocate possible for my wife, Kelly, and for the situation, and to let everybody know that, you know, it's this is a fight that we are going to absolutely beat. And it's, you know, it's going to get tough. It's going to get weird. It's going to get crazy. It's going to get probably a little bit strange. But at the same time, like, I would be less of a human being if I didn't leave every avenue, every rock unturned to make sure that we beat this thing and rid her of cancer. Because, I mean, yeah, there's been people out there that have fought cancer, different kinds of cancer and stuff like that. And it is a horrible, horrible thing to have to go through. Thankfully, there are a lot of things for different cancers and stuff like that, depending on when you can catch it and that you can do different treatments, different, you know, outside of the box things, different everything. And I'm telling you straight up, I will do everything that I possibly can. I know that you guys have been fantastic, you know, in doing so and the support and stuff like that. And I want to just, you know, publicly say thank you again to everybody out there who has reached out. You guys are all amazing. You make it so that a dude like me, you know, is still able to cry in the shower. You know, obviously when nobody's around, you lock the door and you turn the water on really loud so nobody can hear you, but it's a reality. This is a real life thing. And, you just got to have a very strong support group, and I'm very, very thankful for the one that I have. So thank you.
I know that, your longtime friend, sister from another Mr. Emily, put together this, GoFundMe page.
Yeah.
To assist and did it without your knowledge and did it without Kelly's knowledge. But put together this page to try and help you guys out through whatever you are going through, expenses that are coming and everything else. And the support so far has been incredible. I know that the page launched, I think, on Sunday with a goal of $10,000. And 3 days later, it's currently over $6,500, which is amazing. I'm sure that's humbling. It's also a tribute, kid, to what your friends and family think of you and Kelly. And I think it's an amazing sort of thing to have, you know, the community step up and wrap their arms around you and say, we got you. So anyone out there that wants to support, go to the Godfathers of Podcasting Instagram page or Facebook page. The links are right there. Mm-hmm. Donate $5, donate $10, donate whatever you can. And believe me, every dollar will be appreciated, because my man and his woman have a big fight on their hands, and they are not going to lose this fight. I know that.
Here's the reality of it too, and I want to just state that I want to say this very publicly, and this is a reality, and for you guys yourself, and we haven't even talked about this off air and stuff like that, because this is stuff that I'm dealing with right now, on the spot. If you have, this is for everybody out there, if you have life insurance, please make sure that you have something that is called critical illness insurance or long-term disability insurance on your plan. Because if you do not, you are not going to be covered. So that the stuff that comes out in these times of needs, if something like this happens, that comes out of your pocket, that comes out of your savings, that comes out of your retirement plan, that comes out of that stuff. And this is very simple. There's insurance companies out there that have these things. And if you don't, if you don't take advantage of it, if somebody doesn't tell you and you don't get a chance to take advantage of it, you end up like me.
Well, bro,
plain and simple. And that's why I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart, and everybody out there for, you know, yes, I didn't know about the GoFundMe thing, and I'm a very proud person, and you guys know that. And I got very upset about it, but it took my circle of friends to be able to tell me, you know, you just have to accept it sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes you can't be the one pulling somebody up, and I'm like, ah, go fuck yourself. But here we are.
I can imagine you being that way, Tid, because, you know, you're definitely one of the strongest brothers I know. And I can tell you this just from you doing the show tonight, probably something I wouldn't be doing. And you continue to inspire me with your strength, bro. But I think you know this already, but I want to say publicly how much love and support you have here with the brothers on the show. I'm proud to have been posting on my own personal accounts as well, the support. And I know how much I could actually picture you being overly humble to your friend who started the GoFundMe page, but now recognizing how many people are in your corner. So I'm obviously in big support of it. I'm thankful for everybody who's contributed, and we're going to keep this train going, man. We're all on your team. So sometimes you're going to have to accept that. Sometimes you're too much of a big badass to recognize you need tag team partners. So, you know, we're on the team, bro.
Speaking of tag team partner, that is a beautiful segue, because I want to mention that a man that was a guest on this show just a few weeks ago, our pal Rico Montana, a former tag team partner in professional wrestling with Chris Tidwell. I know Rico made a very generous donation on the GoFundMe page, and he's been doing something over the last week or two, just privately out of the goodness of his stone heart. He went out and purchased a bunch of $100 gift certificates.
Yeah.
To Loblaw Shopping Center, and he's been handing them out to people who've been affected by COVID and saying, hey, don't go hungry, have your week's meal on me or whatever, you know, and eat, please, because I want you to be okay. Before we went on air, in addition, to the $250 donation that he made through GoFundMe. Rico said he wanted to donate another $100 gift card to you and Kelly. That's on its way. My mom actually contacted me before the show tonight and said, tell Chris I'm also going to make a donation, but I don't trust the internet, so I'll give you cash.
I hope it's food.
We can arrange that. You have an entire village of friends and family. And,
yeah, no question.
I'm sure Kelly knows that too. In addition to that, we have all of our, all of our fans out there, all of our listeners and viewers and supporters who are definitely pulling for you. I can tell you, folks, in 25 years of knowing this man, seeing him cry is not something I'm familiar with. He's got a heart bigger than Texas, and he'll give you the shirt off his back. And right now, they need your help. So step up to the plate,
yeah,
and help this man out. It'll be much appreciated. We good? We can switch topics.
Yeah, let's do a show, guys. All right, hit the button.
New button on everybody. One thing that we've been talking about ad nauseum for the last few weeks, I only want to spend about a minute on this because right now it's up in the air. We've been talking about get out, American listeners, American viewers, get out and vote. Voting is happening next week. By the time we do the next installment of this show, we will likely know who the new president of the United States is.
Yeah.
With the election happening on November 3rd, we don't know if an announcement will be made on November 3rd because of the amazing number of write-in votes and mail-in votes, but we shall see. Hopefully there will be an announcement on November 3rd one way or the other. Despite my outfit, I would be voting blue. No, I'm not a libtard. I'm a leftist. Thank you. And I do believe heavily in the leftist values, and I don't believe at all in anything that Donald Trump stands for. That
at all.
That debate last week that started off very kosher and very polite was almost creepy. And then it quickly descended into Trump being his typical dumbass self. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. I just wanted to say, because you just coined yourself or called yourself a leftist. And you know what? I have never, ever called myself any representative of a political side.
Me neither. This is new.
No, I know. But this is the point that I want to make. I legitimately believe throughout my life that I have been brought up in such a way that I know the difference between right and wrong, good and bad. Horrible and positive, and every single thing that I believe in, for a reason that I still can't understand, seems to fall on the left side of politics. In other words, when a black man is shot and killed by police, I don't look at the cop and go, he's a good guy automatically because he's wearing a uniform. I look at him and go, he didn't do his job right. And this is an example, one of way too many, of racism in the police department and an obvious sign of police brutality. How, for some reason, that doesn't fall on the right and wrong side of conversations. It seems to fall on the right and left. When it comes to the coronavirus, and I think, shit, man, we're living in a pandemic. This is something none of us have ever experienced before. I've been told it's a good idea to wear a mask to help prevent this thing. Wash up, sanitize, social distance. And I think, okay, I think I'm going to do that because not only do I want to keep myself safe, my family safe, but people that I don't even know safe. And maybe if we all did that, we'd be better off. That's not a political thing, but somehow, again, that falls on the right side of political thinking. Where sure. So I'm a leftist not by choice. I'm a leftist by way of I think that what is right is left and what is right is wrong. And I would love if somebody out there who believes in conservative politics could explain to me how it is they can side with things that, as far as I can see, are so obviously wrong. And
here's the one thing that I'll say to you. Here's the one thing that I'll say to you on this is because I am the humanitarian in me is very much on the left side. Right. There's no doubt about that, because I don't think that there needs to be any kind of exclusion in humanitarianism. And that just doesn't seem to be the case for a number of people who use that to their benefit on the right side to demean what the people are doing on the left side. So I don't agree with that. As a business owner, as a property owner, as a person who pays that kind of tax and everything like that, I do tend to think a little bit more conservatively because it stands to benefit me. Those things. In the grand scheme of things, I definitely am on the left side of thinking. That's where we are because we live in a time where the humanitarianism has to take over besides the homeowner and the business owner and the stuff that happens behind closed doors. We live in a world right now where everything is front and center, so fuck it. You didn't want to talk about politics and religion before. Well, we're not talking about religion, but we might as well sure talk about politics then. You want to bring it out in the open? Let's bring it out in the open. This is the way it is, people.
Yeah, man. And, you know, I can't remember now how many times I've said it on this very show that I don't understand how people can make decisions specifically based on their political allegiances. Because to your point, Ted, there are certain ideas that I have that don't necessarily fall on the left
right
thinking.
Yeah.
They are conservative-minded when you consider politics. I don't look at it as political, but I recognize that this thought train of thought seems to side here. But at the end of the day, you got to weigh all of these opinions of yours, understand that you're an individual. You're never going to have the exact same ideas and opinions as everybody else, certainly those who vote for you and those who vote against. But you got to weigh them and go, what is in the best interest, not of just myself, but of the people? And that is the thing that really tilts me over to the left, is that over and over again, the so-called pros to voting conservative seem to be very beneficial to the elite, beneficial to the rich, beneficial to those who have, and the have-nots continue to have to go without. Where the left side seems to be more in keeping with, let's do for everybody as best as we can. And what I find consistently hypocritical, and I brought this up on the show before too, is that so many so-called Christians call themselves conservatives or on the right side of politics, and everything I've ever learned about Jesus Christ is that he is giving to others. He helps the poor. He shares. He wants you to treat others the same way you want to be treated. And that is not how right-wingers are. I've never seen that through a Donald Trump speech or anything else.
It's not true. They are. They are to themselves.
To themselves. That's
not to everybody else out there.
It's not about everybody. You're down with the team.
It's so right.
Yeah.
And
I am not about that. I am not about
that.
I'm not roots for you. Neither is Jesus. You so-called Christians. Whatever you think you know about being a Christian, you ain't practicing it.
Ted, are you still eligible to vote?
Hi.
What? Are you able to vote in the U.S.? I don't know. I don't
moving
know the
on.
Answer to that question.
Moving on.
Okay. He's already cast his vote for Trump. He doesn't want to talk.
We're not going to discuss your priors. Fine.
See, here's the reality of things, guys. All I can do is motivate other people to go to do what they should be doing, and I can give you an opinion, but I will never tell you what I've done.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Let's just say that it's the right choice.
As the only born and bred American on the show, I thought I would throw that out there.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Donald Trump, it's hard to talk about Trump in the last 5-6 days without talking about his closest associate who has made headlines for all the wrong reasons, Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, Tim, if you saw the movie yet. I know Dan saw the movie. I know you've had other things to deal with over the last few days. Did you get to see the new Borat subsequent film?
So here's the reality of it, guys. I got about a third of the way through it the other night, like after it came out on the weekend and stuff like that. And I was sitting there and I found myself, I was like, you're not even laughing. Because I wasn't allowing myself to laugh at it. My brain wasn't there it. So I was like, you're an asshole. This deserves more. So shut it off. And I haven't gone back to it yet. You know what I mean? But it's one of those things. So I've seen some of it up to a certain point, and I get it and I understand it, and it's brilliant and everything like that. Holy, and I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen he's on a different level. He's on that Jim Carrey level. He's on that Andy Kaufman level. Yeah, he's on that, you know what I mean? He's on a different level, and his brain brain is making you see the hypocrisy that is around you and that you just blindly take in for, you know, for, oh, that's just the gospel.
So I don't think we're doing any major
spoilers. No,
we won't do spoilers.
But I will say this because it's been all over the news.
Yeah.
Right.
The talk of the Rudy Giuliani scene has been all over the news. If you are watching this or listening to this and you really don't want to hear anything, fast forward about 5 minutes, okay? But here's the thing. It's been all over the news. They've been talking about how there was a scene that was shot where Rudy Giuliani thought he was being interviewed by a young woman who in the film is supposed to be Sacha Baron Cohen's 15-year-old daughter.
Right.
In reality, this is a young actress in her early 20s.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But she was playing a 15-year-old girl. Now, when she was interviewing Rudy Giuliani, he obviously did not see her as a 15-year-old girl. He saw her as a woman in her early 20s. And this interview quickly degraded into him pandering to her, making flirtatious comments to her, telling her, you're doing great, sweetie. You're doing a great job. And next thing you know, they get up from where they're seated for the interview. And I guess it's in a hotel room. And they migrate to the bedroom. And you see him lay on the bed and start taking off his pants. And then Sacha Baron Cohen makes a run in and makes the save and pulls the girl out of there. Rudy Giuliani has told the press that he was set up. It's not what it seems. He was removing his microphone pack. There was nothing sexual happening. People have been asking, isn't he married? I think he's like apparently had a serious girlfriend for the last couple of years, but he's been divorced 3 times. This dude is sitting on top of shit mountain and he's not prepared to just say, yeah, I tried to fuck her.
Yeah, he's a slimy piece of trash. Here's the bottom line, and you don't need me to tell you this. Anyone who watches the movie, forget about conjecture and assumptions of what it may not have been going on. She was removing the microphone. He was tucking in his shirt. All the excuses. Here's what is clear and blatantly apparent, is that he touches her on several occasions, including a point where she's bent over, and he touches her right near her ass, the small of her back type of area. And he clearly asked her for her number and her address, her personal phone number and address. So say what, you don't need Viz. You could listen to the audio, never mind what you're seeing. So he could make the claim that it was all innocent, nothing was going to happen, da 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 da. But we all know, nobody asks nobody for no number and address if you're not trying a team.
And let me tell you, Mr. Giuliani, that move, Mr. Giuliani, putting the hand on the small of the back, that's Dan's move. Get your own shit, okay? So he's got all kinds of shit to deal with on election week, of all things.
Yo.
Tid, one thing I know you did watch this week, this past week, and there's been a lot of discussion about this too.
Mm-hmm.
The UFC put forth a much-anticipated fight where Khabib submitted Justin Gaethje, and then subsequently retired.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the surprise of anyone that's been following this story.
Sure.
The passing of Khabib's father, he had initially said he would never fight again and then said he would do this one last fight and then that's it. He said he made a promise to his mother and he can't go back on that. So that's it. He's done. 29-0, 13-0 in the UFC, 3 title defenses in the UFC. And people, in my opinion, Tid, I want to ask you, as the resident MMA expert, people have lost their damn minds going, he's the greatest of all time.
At that weight division? Absolutely not.
I agree with that.
Absolutely not.
The greatest of all time. The GOAT. Yeah,
ever. So, I mean, okay. Let's ask ourselves what it takes to be put into that discussion. Because, you know, if we're talking title defenses, he didn't really have any. If we're talking the one fight, if we're talking the one fight that never really happened and was supposed to happen 97 times, it's him and Tony. So there's still a carrot dangled out there. There's another carrot out there in the name of George St. Pierre, you know what I mean, that people don't know about. And then you've got to look at it like, is it that just that weight category? No, the greatest of all time involves all of them. Which personally I think is kind of a silly, you know, term, because you're never going to put a guy like a Demetrius Johnson into, you know, a Henry Cejudo into the same category as a dude, you know, like Brock Lesnar, for example. Fight game, you know what I mean?
The MMA game is the same as boxing. They love the term pound for pound, the best in the world. Sure. And so to me, it's like when you talk about a guy like you just mentioned, GSP, if I'm not mistaken, GSP had a win streak that was as long as Khabib's entire UFC career.
Sure.
I think he had 9 dominant, successful title defenses.
Here's the thing that keeps Khabib out of that. I mean, there's conversations, you can justify it. Here's for my reasons why you keep him out of that title. Is because a lot of the times I won't fight during this time of year. I won't fight during this time of year. His cancellations and no shows of a lot of fights put him out of the competition. Because if you're talking greatest of all time, you got to talk about a guy who's there every single time. Hell, if you're asking me, Cowboy Cerrone deserves to be in that talk because there's a dude who shows up every single time. Okay, it's not your win or loss. No, I'm saying if we're going to talk about that, we've got to talk about guys like that, right? Okay, so now
that's the participation ribbon. He doesn't get to be in the GOAT conversation.
You get a participation ribbon. That's pretty much it.
For real, when we're having GOAT conversations,
sure,
isn't it fair to have a guy not just complete his career, but go to the extent of where a career could be? Like, how old is Khabib?
7.
Okay, he's retiring early.
Yeah.
So is it not fair to go, listen, there's guys who've had double the length of their careers, who've had equal or better, you know, shows, because at the end of the day,
sure,
if you're going to look at a guy who's had half the career lengthwise as somebody else, that's not exactly a fair comparison.
Right. So there's so many levels to it, though, because then you've got to look at you can't leave the heavyweights out of the conversation because everybody knows that's where the big boys play. Yeah. But what's been the longest title run for heavyweights?
Right.
Three fights, I think. Right. Yeah. With Stipe.
The GOAT is not coming from the heavyweight division.
Okay, so then you've got who? You in the UFC, you've got who? Obvious choice is John Jones is in the conversation, you would think. I don't put him in the conversation because in order to be the greatest of all times, you cannot be a PED cheat.
GSP, Anderson Silva, Demetrius, who you mentioned, Fedor, I think, has to be considered. UFC notwithstanding, but just MMA as a whole.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of other guys who would probably be in that mix, but some of their UFC stuff late in their career, like Mirko Krokop, kind of tainted his legacy a little bit. There's other guys, I think, that would probably have been in that mix 10 years ago, like a Hoist Gracie or you know, those types of guys. They're not even in the discussion anymore.
Right. Yeah.
But to me, Khabib is on the low end of the top 10 of all time.
Right. Adesanya deserves to be in the conversation before that.
Adesanya is going to be in there, man. Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a really interesting conversation. But it's so hard to have when you talk about different weight classes, different eras. Mm-hmm. Like I said, if you asked fans and experts 15 years ago, the GOAT was Gracie.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then there was other guys that were probably taken into consideration, like a Chuck Liddell or, you know, a Randy Couture and those kinds of guys. Their names aren't even in the top 20 anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Time has passed and new fighters have come in and the sport's been revolutionized, man. Like 10, 15 years ago, we weren't watching the same type of MMA fights as we're seeing now.
The game has changed.
Yeah.
I think we should ask the fans again. Let's go to the phones, Donnie. What?
Remember when we used to do that? it never went well. So we're just waiting on our guest to join us. Just sent a message saying that she is trying to connect. She will be with us momentarily. But anyway, I just want to say that I really enjoyed that fight for what it was. But Tid, I want to ask you from your perspective. Like, I remember, I think it was you that said this to me many, many moons ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you tap out to a triangle, you're just a quitter. Because a triangle is just...
I don't know. I mean, you might be paraphrasing, but yeah, I've always been a very firm believer of, like, nobody inside of there is going to die from being air choked out.
And you're not going to break anything. You're not going to.
Right. I understand. I understand tapping. I understand tapping to ligaments. I understand to arm bars, knee bars, all of those types of things. A fucking hard enough pinch. I understand tapping to it. Right. Like, you know, a tong po toe pull. I understand all of that stuff. But an air choke, the most that's going to happen is you're going to go to sleep or you're going to get out of it. Those are your two choices. Now, that been said, I also understand that there's a lot of guys that have gone, and had great careers fighting in MMA, who, when they get to that point, they feel like they're drowning. They say they feel like they're drowning automatically. Mm-hmm. So they tap really quick because I can imagine it's a panic thing. And they go to see, you know, sports therapists and psychologists and stuff like that to try to get over it. But it's that fear of drowning. So they tap. But
absolutely. Gentlemen, it is that time. We are very happy to say that it is time for the big hello, because the first time I saw this wonderfully talented woman, I was just 14 years old. I wandered into Blockbuster Video with one of my high school pals, and we rented The Last American Virgin, strictly because we couldn't stop giggling at the title. I thought the woman on the cover was smoking hot, and I instantly had a crush. I watched that movie about a dozen times, and one scene in particular about 100 times. And before forgetting to return it on Sunday afternoon, yes, I am blaming her for the late charges I received, but in fairness, it was my fault that I got the "you didn't rewind" fee. A couple years later, wow, I saw this woman in a film that my bud Pat Cornwallier and I watched at least 500 times. That was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. We would always role play that I was Ted and Pat was Bill, which meant that this guest was married to my buddy and not me. Life is so unfair. And in addition to those aforementioned films, you've seen her in dozens of other pictures, including cult favorites like Second Time Lucky, Better Off Dead, Freddy's Nightmares, Amityville 2, and so many more. She's also a producer with four terrific shorts to her name. She even had an appearance on my favorite 80s sitcom with the greatest ladies man of his generation, Scott Baio, on Charles in Charge. Don't get it twisted. This woman isn't just that 80s babe that you remember. She's got a new film set to be released in 2020 and is starring in Walking Nightmare, which is set to be released next year. Ladies and gentlemen, the only way we could have a better pre-Halloween guest was if Vincent Price himself had a Wi-Fi connection from beyond the grave. Give it up to the Terror Vision Queen, the lovely and charming Diane Franklin.
Bonjour!
Wow!
Hello! Hello, hello. Thank you for being here.
That was the best introduction I think I've ever had. That was like,
yeah.
I applaud you for that one.
You know, Here's the thing is we've got to start getting the contact for the guests before they come on, so we can like tell them, okay, this is Dan, like Donnie is really good at this thing for this introduction, but you got to stop putting him over every single time. It's going to go to his head. We're never going to find a hat that fits him anymore. It's this crazy thing that we've got going on, Diane, but thank you for joining us nonetheless.
Oh my gosh. How could I not? The Godfathers of podcasts. I mean, you guys, the original, right? As I've heard, you were the, before the youngins came in to do this.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah. That was us.
When podcasts weren't happening.
It wasn't. Right? It wasn't a podcast. It was internet. What was it called? Internet radio.
Yeah.
Is what it was, you know? And yeah.
Just radio, right? Remember?
Yeah.
And then it was like, you're going to show yourself. I don't know. The whole thing is
crazy.
We're still trying to figure it out.
Back in 1996, when Tid and I hosted the very first ever online radio show, I remember saying to my dad, who's now since passed, so Tidwell and I are going to be hosting a radio show. He goes, oh, what station? I said, it's on the internet.
Hello?
On the fucking computer?
What real radio? You know, the one you listen to in the car.
Because my dad was a talk radio fanatic.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
Like, he loved talk radio. And he's like, what do you mean it's on the computer? But he never missed an episode, to his credit.
That's a good guess.
Tremendous.
That's awesome.
Diane, thank you so much for joining us. We're so happy to have you with us.
And for Halloween, too. It's like, yeah. Good timing, right?
It'd be better.
Is this your favorite? Is this your favorite time of the year?
I actually
love. Or are you more of a Christmas?
Christmas.
Are you?
You know, I actually, what I really like it's, I like the fall. I like the changing of the leaves. I'm from back east. I'm from New York, from Long Island. And I like I like wind. I know everyone else is like, ah, but I love wind. So I kind of like the cold. I mean, I don't like the hot wind. Santa Ana here's, we
right.
You know, just catch on fire all over here. But back east, pretty cool. So change of clothes.
You threw in the Long Island accent, and then I was thinking the other day about when you did like some of the other films. I feel like you do every accent there is. Like, how many different accents do you actually have in your bag?
There is many accents I have there, but depends what you're looking for. And that is why, like, and I have some up my sleeve, so that would be good. I love dialect. And I love, I just like, I can hear it, you know, I mean, I have, you know, that like, you know, I mean, I'm sure you guys do this too. You have your radio voice, you know, it's just like, sort of like, you know, your center and like, you can bring it all forward. But then when you get together with your friends is, you know, you start talking like that, you know, whatever. So, hey, what are you talking about? Like, where are you guys from? Like, where, what? I'm
So Dan and I are born and raised in Toronto, Ontario. Tid is from, he lives just outside Toronto, but he's a Nevada native.
No, it's Nevada. I'm from Nevada. I'm from a little town called Las Vegas originally. So, and they say as I get more and more inebriated, then my accent comes out. My accent comes out, apparently.
You're in, right?
Right.
So you don't have any problems just like flipping right in there. Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I love dialect. And look, you know, I've been in the business a long time. I mean, frankly, I think I've been a professional actress longer than most people have been, you know, in their jobs. Like, I started when I was 10, literally. Like,
wow.
But the weird thing is, when I started, I thought everybody, like, I thought all actors started when they were wee little. Like, I didn't realize that was such a small percentage of all the actors that were out there. So it kind of amazing. I've seen the business change. I've been through so much that a lot of actors haven't. And I go like, whoa, like, you know, I'm just glad to still be here and to still be acting and stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, you've been acting for like 15, 20 years now, doing commercial work, TV, movies and everything else. How many accents do you do?
Well, you know, that's a funny thing. I was just going to ask Diane about that, because other than, you know, say the Jamaican Patois thing like that, you know, and a little bit of, I was about to try and Borat. It would be so bad.
I can do like,
but I was going to ask you, Diane, what advice would you have for people trying to, because I honestly am trying to get more into voiceover. I don't know if you've done a lot of voiceover work.
I have done voiceover.
How do you manage to get all these accents down? Because they are not easy.
No, they're not easy. Okay, so first of all, if you want to do voiceovers, the basic deal is this. First of all, voiceover is such a specialty thing. It's like a niche. And the people who do it, they do thousands of voices. Why do they do so many voices? Because when you get hired to do a voice, you have to do, they get like one for the price. Four for the price of one. So like you come on, you'll do a cartoon or something, and then you'll do one voice, but then you go, oh, well, we need three other voices. So that's the first thing. And people who do voiceovers, not voice work. Okay. Yeah. There are the announcers, you know, like Tuesday night on CBS.
Right.
You know, there's the voice announcers, and that has to do with your resonance. Do you have like rich, you know, strong resonance,
or
you know, something very like, you know,
the trailer voice,
Pontiac, Pontiac Lexus, you know, like that kind of like, you know, kind of upper class sort of a voice. So you get just a great tone, you know. So there's that. If you have a natural tone that's unusual, you know, I've gone up to people and I've said, you have to get in voiceovers. You have an incredible tone to your voice that is really special. So there's that kind of a thing where a person can get into voices through their own natural voice. But then there's other people who have to work it. And how they work it is you learn not only do you learn a dialect, you know, it's all like this.
Yes, I like.
What? You know, like you learn, impressions, you know,
right.
So it's like, you know, you learn impressions and you, because they'll often say in a voiceover interview, oh, can you do like Jimmy Durante or can you do Marilyn Monroe, whatever, you know, so, you know, Seinfeld, you know, so you need to have that in your pocket. So people who do voices, let me just tell you something. They love it. And the and so because they love it, they do it all the time. And they're not afraid to try new things. So my best advice is, if you want to get into voices, copy every voice. Listen to every voice and copy it and try. And it has to do with positioning in your, you know, like I teach voice stuff too. So it has to do with positioning in your mouth and how you use your lips and your tongue and your teeth.
Gotcha.
Is your focus forward? Is it in the nose? Is it in the chest? You know? So it is super duper cool. And
that is cool.
Cartoon voices, you have to hear action in your voice. You know, like you have to hear, whoa.
And when they're running, bouncing, jumping, all of that. Yes.
Like all that extra stuff, that's what they do. And the highs and the lows. And creating voices that have never been created before. Mm. Like Squidward. And, you know, like, how do I create my own voice? So what you do is you close your eyes and you do these voices. And most of the people that I know who have done voiceover work have started when they were kids.
Right.
And so it's sort of like almost like a private little thing that they do on their own. So I would say if you've got a lot of time and you are free, you know, just do it. There's no right and wrong. And there you go.
Thank you. No, that's awesome. That's a master class.
Did that help? Okay, good.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's actually really useful.
So, yeah.
I do a bunch of impressions myself, but they're mostly useless because they're only of our friends.
Oh, so, that's hilarious.
I will give you this, Don. You're good at this show.
Diane, I want to ask you this. You talked about, like, you know, giving this advice to Dan and other people and stuff like that because you do voice acting, teaching and whatnot. And you, a moment ago, you talked about you've been doing this since you were 10 years old. So that's like at least 15 years by now, right? I mean, I gotta ask you in that time, because you've worked with, like, some incredible people, you know what I mean? And you've been in there with the who's who of Hollywood and whatnot. Who was the person that gave you that one piece of advice, that one little tidbit that just kind of like resonated with you, that made you just go, man, you know what? This is what flipped the switch. And this is what, you know, drove me to do this. Like, was there somebody like that for you?
All right. So this is a really interesting story. Although, like, you know, it's a good question because I've answered with different answers, sort of like how it brought me forward. I mean, I knew I wanted to be actress when I was 4. The person who was my go-to person, the person that inspired me, was Marlo Thomas from That Girl.
Okay.
Because she was on that show and she played an actress and she had really bubbly energy and I really identified with her. But that was something that I saw her and I was inspired. But then, okay, so this is an interesting story. It's kind of weird, but it's bizarre. When I was about 14, I had started acting. I did modeling and commercials, but I had never done a film and I had never done, I just was very green, but really, so I wanted to be an actress so bad. So I got this extra role on the movie Endless Love with Brooke Shields. And, so like Brooke Shields, like, she was stunning. I mean, this girl was, I mean, and I think she's younger than me. So she was like, she was the girl. And I had actually done some, I did modeling when Brooke and I were the same height. That's how long ago it was.
Wow. Amazing.
I knew her a little bit, but when I did that job, she was so nice to me and I was like in the background, but I got to watch her work. And Franco Zeffirelli was talking to her like, oh, you know, whispering, do this and da, da, da. And she's like this incredible scene and it's a party scene. And her acting was so delicate and she was just so beautiful and she was so nice. And I remember as a young person thinking, you know, my goal is to be a nice actor. Like, why do you have to be an a-hole? Why can't you be so freaking nice? Like, be grateful. Like, sit down, you know, like, be humble, sit down, right?
Be humble, right?
So, like, I'm like, oh my God. So when that was kind of my thing. Like, I was like, why can't you just be nice? Do your job, do your work, but don't be in horse's ass. So anyway, it turns out when I talked to her and I met her, she was so nice that I was taken aback. I was like, okay, well, I guess I don't need to do this anymore. I She's done it. She's done everything. Oh, she's a beautiful actress. She's lovely. She's graceful. She's got, you know, poise. And she's so nice. And she just was, I guess at the time for me was like, she was what got me able to do acting because she had the look, those eyebrows, you know, and that got me in. So I went home and I went, okay, I guess I'm not going to be an actress. I have no reason. She's done already everything I wanted to do. I'm done. I'm over. So I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I guess I'll be a biochemist. I'll find the cure. I guess that's what I'll do, right? Like, okay, I'll just find that out. And then I went to sleep. And in the next morning, I woke up and I thought, I just didn't feel right. Like I wanted to do it. And then I woke up and I went, oh my God, wait a minute. There's room for more than one. There's room for more than one nice person in the business. Sure. Why? Right. So that's when I hit me and I went, okay, I'm in. That was the turning point where I decided I'm going to move full forward because I wasn't going to let someone else's success or whatever else somebody might, I guess, you know, not that she was competition, but there was, I was going to go on my own path and that was it. So interesting story that you asked that because I do remember that was a big turning point. I never in my life thought I was going to stop until that moment.
That was a huge movie too, right? Like, yes,
and at that time, those movies, people have to realize there was limited entertainment. You couldn't watch things all the time. You had to physically either go home and watch something when it was happening on TV.
Right.
Yeah.
If you had dinner and lunch and you missed it, you were out of it.
That was it.
Or you had to get in the car, have your parent drive you to the theater, get in the theater, buy your popcorn, pay the money, go sit down, watch the thing, and remember it. Because guess what? If you wanted to see it again, you'd have to pay another $5.
That's right.
Or, it was a big deal. So
it was like what I did with my friends in high school, where we went to Blockbuster and we looked at your movies that had the sexiest box art, and we looked on the back and it said may contain full frontal nudity, and we said, "Yep."
Yep, that's right. Which is why you saw Last American Virgin. And weren't you surprised when you saw sex, but you also learned about love or not love? Right?
I can't even think about Last American Virgin and look at you without blushing.
Oh, that's nice.
That's why he wore red. That is why.
I'm trying to mask
the
shade. Oh, yeah.
By the way, I recently did a thing called Skin. It's a documentary called Skin. Did you know about this? I did a documentary.
No, tell us.
Oh my God. I want to know about it.
Okay, yeah, because you're mentoring virgins. I did a documentary called, and this was just probably within the last year. It was before COVID. So, but it came out this August called Skin, the History of Nudity in Films or Movies. Oh. And it's, I guess, pay-per-view, but they show virgin and I talk about virgin. And so like, it's all these actresses who have done nudity. And you know who else is in it? Borat. So, Sasha Cohen,
Sasha Baron Cohen. He used a stunt penis. That doesn't count.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. So, wait. Oh, come on. Stop it. Ruining my nightmare. No,
when you were doing a lot of those films, you know, going back to, you know, the early 80s and the mid 80s, did you ever look at a script and go, no, I don't feel comfortable with nudity in this scene. This is a little gratuitous. This is like cheap thrills only.
Yeah.
And then did you ever read that and go, ah, to hell with it. It's a job.
No, I never did. But I will tell you this. Okay. So first of all, it's fair. Good question. So for me, it was like, three movies and I'm out. Like, you know, you do three times and I'm out because I didn't want to be known. When you do nudity, it's, you know, it's sort of like once you do it, then all of a sudden I didn't want people to think that was all I could do, you know?
Right.
And that's what happens. So like once you do it, then you go, well, are they hiring me because I have done it? Like you, as an actress, you're like, come on. I mean, this, you know, there's people, first of all, the other thing is there are women with incredible bodies. My body, okay. But like people like have stunning, outrageous bodies. I'm like, bravo to you, you go. But give some other women a chance. But anyway, yes, okay, so I was given a movie and okay, so Last American Virgin I did because there was that deep storyline, right? There was like that heavy duty, you know, my role was like there's nudity, but then there was also nudity for a purpose. And for me, the nudity always had to have purpose within the story, right? So then, regardless of how gratuitous it seemed, it was at least a good storyline. And then I did Amityville. And Amityville, I played the daughter, but for me, I was working with such good actors and it was a reputable project. And also playing that role, that situation was so awkward and uncomfortable. I mean, honestly, the hardest part of that was sometimes the dialogue because it was just not natural. And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to come off saying my panties? Like, I mean, just seriously, like what's with that line, right? Mm-hmm. You're in a situation like that, you're like speechless, but anyway, but when I did, and then Second Time Lucky, I play Eve. So, okay, it makes right. sense, right? I mean, let's be real. Actors want to be real, that's real. Sure. But the movie that I actually turned down was done by, oh my God, Betsy Russell. And it was, it had to do with a mechanic. It was like a mechanic movie. Somebody right now is saying, I know the movie.
Okay.
And I forgot, Betsy Russell wound up getting the part. But that was a movie where it was like, really, this is just being me and being a mechanic and taking my shirt off. Look, So yes, you know, for me, I was not just.
Was it Tomboy?
Hmm?
Was it Tomboy?
Yes, Tomboy. They offered me that role. They just said, here, I think that was one of the, actually, now that you're bringing it up, someone asked me recently if I was offered roles, and I was offered that part, and I was like, no. But you got to understand, I was, I screen tested for Amadeus. I mean, like, I was, like, up there. Like, I was auditioning for, like, major, major big films. I screen tested for Karate Kid, and, I'm just trying to think, like, all the different, Flashdance. And I didn't wind up doing Dirty Dancing, but you know, like I was doing up for so many films, and you know, you're a young actor, you want to try to get the best roles you can. So,
but, how many times?
Yeah, but I
how many?
I did it. You know,
How many times did you ever run into nepotism? You talk about all of these things that you went to and stuff like that, and it's Hollywood, right? And there's a lot of people with the same last names like that run in that kind of circle. How many times did you have a problem with it?
Good. That's interesting. Okay, first of all, I'm perhaps one of the most naive people that you'll ever meet. I never realized there was nepotism. I mean, okay. Seriously, like, I never even occurred to me that someone, like, when I didn't get a part, it was all on me. I was like, mm-hmm. I didn't do my best job, or I wasn't good enough, or it was all on me. And I was just talking to Deborah Foreman, who was in Valley Girl, about this, and she was like, Diane, it wasn't us, you know? And I was like, what? You know, all that, you know, as an actor, you take it to
right.
heart. But as I've gotten older, I've realized, you know, so people want to work with people that they feel comfortable with, that they know, maybe that they and also maybe represent their work. So when they see somebody doing one kind of film, they go, oh, well, that I want to have somebody maybe new that's going to represent my work. So there's reasons why things happen. But it is a shame because obviously, like now as an adult, I've run into so many other actors and directors who have said to me, I love your work and I would love to work with you. And I thought, oh, why didn't you hire me? You know, why didn't, but it was because it wasn't, yeah. I didn't run in the right same crowd, you know?
Right. And that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
You mentioned a minute ago, Betsy Russell. I know that she was a huge part in those movies that were part of the Saw franchise.
Yeah,
Dan, yes. mm-hmm. You're a huge fan of that series, the Saw movies.
Yeah, big time.
And I know, Tid, you're a big horror film guy in general.
Yeah.
Me, myself, I love film. But of all movie genres, horror is probably my least favorite. And it's not because I'm scared. It's because...
Sure, Don.
It's because the horror film paradigm has always bothered me in terms of the way that the scripts flow. I feel like if I was an actor and I was walking in and looking at sides, and if I was looking at the script, I would be like, I see exactly where this is going. And, you know, the best
really?
Horror,
You're a pro wrestling fan.
Let's run away.
The best horror movies are the ones that break from that script paradigm.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, like the Psychos and Get Out and, you know, there's so many others that break from that paradigm.
All right.
Scream made fun of the horror movie genre for exactly those reasons.
Sure.
And was successful because of it. As an actor, I'm wondering if you ever had the situation where you go in, you read a film part, you read a script and go, oh my God, this is so like this is so lowbrow and romantic.
Yeah, there are differences in scripts. I mean, certainly I've read good scripts, I've read bad scripts. Okay. And people read scripts and say, who is paying for this to be made? Like, oh my God, like someone's actually paying for this to be made when maybe so and so you know has an incredibly much better script. But here's the difference. And well, here's why. Because horror. First of all, everybody in the world feels horror. Comedy is regional, but horror is universal. Mm. So everyone gets scared and everyone
has
a universal feeling. You can send a horror film to an American, you can send it to Russia, you can send it to South America, you can send it to France. It's sure. the same experience. Two, when you watch horror, you know it's make-believe, but it's like your practice of dealing with it. So like you look at it and you go, what would I do in that situation? And you're living, you're with the characters. So some of it, if you see a movie where everything, you know what's going to happen, well, you're going to feel very good and very confident. Like, yeah, this is going to happen. Watch this. It's bringing your sense of accomplishment. Like, I can handle something scary in yourself, which is psychologically good for you. Or if you're freaking out, at the end, you're like, wow, I'm glad that didn't happen to me. So there's a lot of psychological relief and stress relievers that happen in horror. Plus, today it's the best time for horror because you've got boutique, different elements of horror. Like I want to watch the gory one. Ooh, well, I like the psychological.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you what your opinion is of the found footage genre of horror because horror movies are so well known for the music, especially that will help you understand behind the corner if there's something spooky about it. But the found footage takes all of that away, and you become as a viewer, almost arguably a character, the person behind the camera who's right there with the characters, not knowing what's happening. Do you dig it? Is that a part of horror that you like, or is that one of those lower brow mediums in your opinion?
Oh no! I like every aspect of filmmaking and storytelling. Okay. I like if the camera is somebody was just talking about how Amityville, the camera was a character. The camera was the devil. And I thought, I all these years I never thought of it, and I went, oh, yes, it is the devil. Why when he looks down on Sunny from above, we are the devil. So the audience is the devil. It's fascinating. So I really love that. I also like the documentary horror. I like the ones that, you know, they make believe maybe that it's not real, but it's real, but it's not, you know, like just, I enjoy that all. The only thing that I don't personally like or watch is torture. I'm not a big torture person. And I'm not, although I really respect special effects, like, you know, the heart pumping out of like, and then the blood. I respect that as an art form, like as like, wow, I can't believe you made that so realistic. I could throw up, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't personally like to watch
it. I hear you.
And I actually, my favorite films were always like The Invisible Man or like the ones that were creepy.
Supernatural.
And my imagination, it was scarier because of my imagination than seeing it.
Sure.
You know, that
I still think, would be my point think, for the stuff.
Taste, you know?
Would you say, Dan?
No, I was going to say that I would agree with her point, which is why I do like the found footage type of stuff.
Oh,
Because of the unknown of the, you know, like you're right there with the characters having no idea what's next. No, nothing to trigger you.
Yeah.
You guys can think I'm nuts, but the horror movie that really freaked me out the most and gave me the biggest, literally physical reaction when I watched it in the theater and I was terrified to my core.
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yes, thank you, Tid. No, it was the original Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, that's my point.
Because
absolutely,
you never saw anything.
Correct.
And when the film came out, I remember hearing. I saw it on opening night.
Yeah,
sat in the third row. The stupid shaky cam was making me nauseous.
Yeah, literally.
And on top of that, I remember hearing on the radio, we're not sure what this is. It might be a documentary. So I'm watching it like it's a documentary.
Yeah, man.
And
crazy.
It fooled people, man.
And it was the timing of it. We didn't know that yet.
That's right.
It was the timing of history, and we were fooled. Or like, you know, wait, and the camera, the quality is not so good, so we're taken off guard.
Yes.
And then the surprise is, oh, my God.
I love it.
History. Like, I mean, the horror. It's phenomenal.
I want to talk about the horror movie that you have coming out next year that you're starring in. But before we get to that, we'll talk about that just before we say goodnight. But before we get to that, one thing I have to touch on, Diane, because I was a massive, massive fan of this. And I mentioned in the open, one of my high school best pals, Pat, and I, we dressed up for Halloween as Bill and Ted. We went everywhere together, and people looked at us like we had the long hair, and everyone looked at us like we were. I was the taller guy, and I was Bill, or I was Ted, excuse me. And
we're together. Okay, got it.
you were with Alex Winter, weren't you?
No, I was with. And that's good. You said that I was Princess Elizabeth, but they kept saying they got the credit. Yeah. Bill and Ted's. So it said I was Joanna. So I was with.
So I want to talk about that experience and what happened with the recently released part 3. Before we do that, though, for anyone who isn't having it come quick to mind, I just want to show this quick clip. This is Diane Franklin in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, this is the part where you say the parts.
Boys. It's the boys.
Are we not getting the audio?
No.
Who? It's the boys. I'll just talk like this.
Yeah, let's do the voices. We'll all do the voices. Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm good. I don't know the
This is the best part.
I come to you with a message of love.
Oh, what is this message you got?
Do you want to go to the prom with us in San Dimas?
Oh, which is okay. Sure, that's fine. I'd love to.
All right, that was a colossal.
That would have been amazing. Can we learn the lines and do
that
it
with us? Yeah.
Oh, tremendous!
We should have had a read through. I don't know what happened there with the audio not coming through. It's technical difficulties. The Daniel curse strikes again.
Sorry, guys.
So cool to see you in that film. Really bizarre to me when my pals and I were so excited to see Bogus Journey, and we were like, what's going on? Where are the wives? Right? That was a big plot point. And then they come back with part 3, and I remember reading this presser that said they're bringing back all the original cast members. And you know, so I'm watching part 3, whenever it was, early September, and I'm looking and I'm going, oh, they've got like, you know, all these different
Amy,
people.
Like the, you know, the girl who played Mom, she came back. Beth came back.
The one who played Keanu's father, like everybody was like the original actor, regardless of how they've aged, you know, or what situation they're in physically with you know, their appearance, their health, whatever.
Yep.
No Carlin.
And Carlin was there too. They had a
hologram. Yeah, I'm sure, right?
They even got Carlin in that thing.
They even have the other Bill and Ted princesses in a clip.
Right.
So when I watch this and I go, wait a minute.
So
where's Diane? Where's Kimberly Cates?
Whip them out.
And then on top of everything, they didn't just say, okay, Bill and Ted are married and have kids now that are a big plot point in the film. They could have said Bill and Ted had new wives because they were shitty husbands and they got new wives. No, it's Joanna and Elizabeth. It's the same wives from part 1. But somehow, while everyone else has aged, Joanna and Elizabeth are both looking like they're 35 and completely different people. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, you and Kimberly,
ew.
You and Kimberly are right around the same age as Keanu and Alex.
Yes.
So it would have looked right.
Yeah.
You got heat.
Who did you piss off?
I need my posse to help me. Let me just tell you something. Okay. So first of all, thank you for saying that. Okay. And Kimberly and I, when we did Bill and Ted's and they said they were going to do a next Bill and Ted's, they'll take it down the road, you know, bogus. We thought we were going to be in the movie, but we thought, the princesses are the same princesses. And originally we thought, well, maybe they're going to change to different princesses. And then what happened was the first horror, okay, was we actually had to audition for our own role back in Bogus Adventure. Our own role audition. Okay. Now here you're talking about nepotism and all this stuff, right? Okay, so here's what happened. When we found out we had to audition for our own roles, basically what happened was they got a new director, and the director wanted to have other girls play our roles. And we were like, well, that's not okay. And then they said, well, okay, well, you can audition for them. And we were like, okay, all right, fine. And we auditioned, and I didn't realize this then. But at the time I thought, well, you know, they kept saying it's the director's choice. The director decided to go with other girls and that's the way it is. So I thought at the time, maybe it is nepotism. Maybe it is somebody, you know, maybe it was somebody that the director wanted to hire that was friends and like this. And I thought, well, what do you do? Right. What can you do? But Kim and I were very hurt. And we were like, that is the most insulting thing. It's one thing if they had, you know, Egyptian princesses or Italian princesses, but because they had us rehired, it was like so disrespectful. You know, it was a slap in the face. It was weird. Okay. So, but you know, again, we never knew there would even be a second one. So there was a second one. So when they thought about making a third one, Kim and I thought, okay, well, that was obviously that director, and they hired a new director. So we thought, okay, well, that was the other director. That was his thing.
Right.
And in the meantime, that experience was like, we didn't know Bill and Ted's was happening. So when Bill and Ted 3 came along, we were like, okay, you guys, I met with the producer, I saw Alex, and these were like things where I let them know, you know, that Kim and I were absolutely interested. We would go beyond what was normal and natural for
film. Sure.
I said, you know, we'll come and we'll fly in on our own dime, we'll make, you know, we'll be whatever cameo, anything you need to, because I knew that when people see the film, they would be so happy to see us return. I know that because it's not about me doing the part. It's about respecting
for sure
the audience and respecting it's just like it's a psychological thing. If you don't see somebody who was playing the part and you've got, it's one thing to have like national what is it called, National Vacation, or where the kids
National Lampoon's Vacation.
Lampoon. They changed the kids because they wanted to keep them young, at least they say that, but in this case this wasn't true. So
this
is Vivian.
This is Darren from Bewitched and Aunt Viv from Fresh Prince. Pay no attention.
Right. Like what? Like, so basically what happened was they were trying to be very nice, but what they really were trying to do was keep us from not making a big scene about it. And what happened was when they told me first that Bill and Ted's was coming out, I said, I announced it on my Facebook. When they said that they were going to replace us, they said, we're not having you be in it as the princesses. They said, it's the tradition, which is not.
The tradition?
I'm sorry. It's their excuse. Okay. So what wound up happening was I posted something on Facebook and it went completely viral. It went insane. They got all nervous because they don't want, they want their film to have good press.
Okay.
And I was literally, my attitude was, you know what? I don't want to be the person that brings Bill and Ted down. we need this film. We need Bill and Ted's now. We need that upbeat energy. We need that positive thing. And frankly, I would, you know, whether they make money or not, like, good for them. I hope that they make money because it's a positive message.
Yeah.
But when they, and then the actresses they pick, great. Love them. They're hilarious. Good job. I mean, whatever. But then they even strung us sort of along and said, well, you know, maybe we'll get you a cameo. Something went down. They did not want us on that film for some reason. And I will tell you this. I heard some things, and I have to say that they, you know, now that the film is out, first mm-hmm. of all, I can't watch it. I can't. I have not been able to watch it. So,
wow.
And it's not, I'm sure it's good. I've been telling everybody to watch it because I'm like that kind of person, like, go enjoy, have fun. But emotionally, I can't. And then somebody told me, oh, well, then, you know, you're in the film. And I'm like, what? And they's like, well, they thanked you. So now on IMDb, it says, you know, and Diane Franklin's in Bill and Ted 3. I'm not. And that's just not cool. Plus, I also found out from the other princess who was in Bill and Ted's, she said she came out of the blue, the girl who played also Princess Elizabeth, Annette, as Koi, I can never say her last name, but anyway, she's a really nice girl. And she told me she came out of the blue. She didn't know the director. So originally I thought, well, maybe they just want the guys. They want the focus of the film to be on the guys and not on the princesses. You know, they don't want 24. I get that. But
Did you ever reach out directly to Keanu on this whole thing? Because, I mean, you know, you obviously, his number ain't that hard to find for you, I'm sure.
Well, let me just say this.
Please.
I'm not going to say anything, but.
Well, then what the fuck?
You think that people who have that kind of power and that kind of say would have a big influence on us being able to be in it. And as much as they, you know, everyone was saying, oh, we really want you, but the director doesn't. And they blame the director again. I'm going to tell you something. I don't believe it. So it's not my call to say, but I would say this. Alex wanted us, and I have to say this. It's not going to go away quietly. I mean, I had somebody
from
the Associated Press who came to me and wanted to talk about this. So I was like, it's messed up. It's not okay. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, that hashtag Me Too came up. It's like, this is also another part of it. And that ageism thing.
Yeah. So
I don't know what it is, but it's definitely something that is not finished and it's not okay. And Tim and I are very, we've been really, really tried to play ball for the sake of the fans, because again, people are going to see Bill and Ted's, they'll go see all of them, right? It's a fun show and it's a great message. But at the same time, it's because of people like you. Thank you for noticing. Thank you.
Well, listen, the elephant in the room, the elephant in the room is the word you just used. And it is ageism.
Yes.
Because, you know, from Excellent Adventure to Bogus Journey, the princesses got younger by almost 10 years. And then from Bogus Journey to Face the Music, the princesses got younger by about 15, 16 years. So while you're saying, I think they want the focus to be on Bill and Ted,
what
they're inadvertently doing is placing this gigantic, creepy spotlight on the fact that their wives keep getting younger and are allegedly the same person. So the interesting sort of pop culture piece here is Keanu gets a lot of love in the mainstream world because he is apparently Mr. Anti-ageism. I find it really interesting.
Did you notice his new girlfriend supposedly the girlfriend that he has? And let me just say something. I find that incredibly interesting.
Well, see, and that's the thing. He's getting all this love from the public about his girlfriend, Alexandra Grant, who is a beautiful woman, but she has white hair. So people are looking at her like she's an old lady. She's 9 years younger than Keanu. I just want to say she's 46.
Yep. Yep.
She's 9 years younger than Keanu, but she's got white hair.
And who's to say also that they're actually in a relationship? Do you know what I'm saying?
I would have thought she was a beard.
What are you saying, Ted?
It's a thing. It's a thing. I mean, I'm sure he's not going to stop me from getting any bookings, but I mean,
that's how unfortunate, though, man. Because
the things are done in this world, and some of it is for look at this and don't look at this, right?
You know? So are you saying unequivocally you don't believe that that's a real relationship, and you think that this is all a PR thing?
I do, but that's not just my personal opinion. That's what I thought immediately when it happened. I went, oh my God.
Diane, we've got about a minute or so left. Please tell us about, you've got a film, I believe, that's about to come out, and it's called High Holiday. And you also have Walking Nightmare, a scary new film.
Waking Nightmare,
that's coming out, I believe, next year, right?
Mm-hmm. Waking Nightmare should be coming out next year. High Holiday is supposed to come out before the end of the year. I think it's probably just going to go directly to video, but it's with Jennifer Tilly, who I actually did a TV show called Boone. She's a doll. She's a sweetheart. She's so nice. Jennifer. And Tom Arnold, I believe. And Cloris Leachman is in it also.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so she's great. I mean, they're amazing. I wish I'd had a scene with Cloris Leachman. That would have been amazing. But I also have a secret film, untitled yet, huge film coming out next year. So I hope people stay on my social media. Go to Diane Franklin 80 on Twitter and Instagram, actress Diane Franklin, and Facebook. Just find me. I'm Facebook. It's my one is filled, but find me somewhere. I'm usually connected to them. I don't understand Facebook, and people who follow me probably see that. I open pages everywhere and go, is this the right? What do you do? So,
I just figured out Instagram, and now my 8-year-old's trying to explain TikTok. I don't have a clue what the hell's going on.
Oh, wait, I have to share something that's really, really cool. So my daughter, her name is Olivia De Laurentiis. She's on Snapchat, and she has a show called Apocalypse Goals, and she's on TikTok on a show called Sid and Olivia, and she is a comedian with her comedy partner, and their work is hilarious. So if you're on TikTok, Donnie, go to Sid and Olivia. You will die. I mean, so funny. They do like social commentary there. Apocalypse Goals is about these two millennial girls in the apocalypse, and you know, we're in the apocalypse now, so.
Sid and Olivia, don't they have like masked characters, and they do this stuff in the park and everything like that? Is this the one? It's like a YouTube thing. Is this the one that I'm thinking of for kids?
No, it's for adults.
I'm just waiting. Oh, for adults. Oh, even better.
Yeah,
it's what are you watching kids shows?
Dude, I got nieces, bro.
My daughter's name is Olivia De Laurentiis. So look up that name.
Is there a relationship?
Oh, yeah, you said, everybody has a relationship. Distantly. My husband.
Okay.
My husband is De Laurentiis, but distantly related from Dino, who I did Amityville for.
Right. This is why I'm asking.
Right? What? Their great grandfathers are related, and, you know, it was like one. Now, Dino spells his name with two I's at the end, and our side of the family spells it with one I at the end. So, but we're related. We are related to Bob De Laurentiis, and he did Fargo and The OC and Providence. Like, just like, you know, funny. Like, so there's the TV aspect of it too. But my husband, you know, he writes or wrote for Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, the cartoon! Tremendous, yeah.
So if you see that, I mean, he did a lot of other writing, but like, you know, people who like Fairly Odd Parents, The Next Generation, they're like, what? So Ray De Laurentiis. So anyway, my son, I have to bring up my son. His name is Nick De Laurentiis. Nick, so check him out on Spotify. And he's got an album, and he's 21, bright red curly hair, gorgeous. So both my kids, my daughter's 24, my son's 21. So.
All right. So we'll work on checking out your daughter's TikTok, and we'll work on
what?
And we'll get a musical collaboration between your son and Danny O.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right.
Tremendous.
Diane, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've been an absolute pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your evening. I know you're a little bit earlier into your night than we are out on the left coast, but have a great one. Give your lovely husband a great topless scene, just like, you know, something straight out of The Last American Virgin, and I'm going to just live vicariously through him for the rest
of
the
evening. All right. He's a lucky guy, and I'm lucky too.
Thanks, Diane.
Au revoir, à bientôt, and merci buckets for having me on.
Thank you so much.
We're very lucky to have you. Thanks.
Bye.
Diane Franklin, everybody. There she goes. That was cool. Fellas,
man, we got some
dirt.
Parting thoughts before we say goodnight.
You know, listen, I have a hard time with the Keanu Reeves thing. That's crazy stuff right there. I mean, I still got to kind of give him a pass because, you know, in my eyes, he's got that John Wick vibe going on.
Oh, man.
Where, you know, he's killing people over dogs, man. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? He's building clout on this motherfucker for like 3 movies in a row.
But John Wick has to be the character who's killed the most people in a movie, either him or Rambo.
There's probably some John Woo flicks out there, you know, that would some Armed and Dangerous and stuff like that. But it's crazy.
He would kill 300 guys in one fight.
Yeah, combined weight of 72 pounds.
Maybe you're right. I will say this, though, and I wanted to say it quickly when we had her on, is that I think whenever directors cast their actors, they really do have to keep their audience in mind, especially when you have a franchise or an iconic story. And I know I speak for a lot of people when I say I hate to see the same character played by someone else, because part of the joy is the nostalgia of it and the, oh man, look, it's them and they've come back. And especially if you've used that as a theme for the Face the Music installment of Bill and Ted, and the theme is we've brought back everyone, but you're missing some of the real key ingredients. It really hurts the product. I haven't even seen it, and I know that.
It's crazy. That's crazy.
Small bit characters from Excellent Adventure that were brought back, and they're now old folks. And
yeah, man, they always get a pop anytime I see them come back. You know,
you got to go back. You got to go back to some of those originals, man. You know, so we're going into Halloween weekend, guys, and I got to ask you guys very quickly before we go, right? Because we've talked about Mount Rushmores before and stuff like that, right? So we're talking horror movies. We had an actress on who's done a bunch of horror movies, and we didn't get a chance to ask her and stuff like that. But very quickly in the top of your head, because we're going to ask it right now, you got four. Who's your Mount Rushmore of horror movies right now? Dan,
The Shining is definitely on mine.
Okay, so Jack,
we might have to put together a crew Mount Rushmore, because you're going to make me think of three more, and I got to think about it, man. The Shining for sure.
So off the top of my head, here's what I'm going to give you. And they're not necessarily the best. They're just the ones that hit.
They're on your Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Okay.
My personal Mount Rushmore. The original Psycho.
Okay.
It's definitely on there. Blair Witch Project, which I mentioned in the interview, definitely on there. For different reasons, I would have the original Nightmare on Elm Street, which breaks my rule of hating horror movies with children.
Well, they all are.
They all are?
Dude, Jason is one of my, like, you know how much of a Jason Mark I am, but let's think about that. All he did was like, hey, teenagers fucking, I'm going to kill you. Right? Michael Myers, I'm hunting one chick. I'm going to kill you. Chucky was like an old dude possessed into a little kid's doll.
Yeah.
Like, it all had this weird kid thing and stuff like that, except for one.
Scary. The two girls in the Shining hallway? Always going to be.
Yeah. Scary. No, here's what the two that stick out for that original, you know, pack that got to go on there. I'm telling you straight up. Okay. Pinhead.
Oh, yeah.
Hellraiser.
Yeah. Right. And Leatherface.
Yeah. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Let's say that the Godfathers of podcasting Mount Rushmore of horror is Jack Nicholson from The Shining, Norman Bates, Pinhead, and Leatherface. Is that a fair?
That's a crazy obscure one. I'd like to hear what the other people think. Send them in.
Yeah.
Post them on our Facebook group, post them on Instagram, or just email us. Godfathers podcasting at gmail.com.
Nothing would be scarier than another term of Donald Trump. So please, don't vote wisely, everybody down there.
Don't just vote. Vote blue.
Yeah.
Okay?
Vote often.
I don't want to be a dick and tell you who to vote for, but I'm going to tell you who to vote for.
I will.
Yeah.
Don't vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So by the time we come back to our next installment, we should know who the next president of the United States is. We shall see. In the meantime, go to godfathersofpodcasting.com.
Right.
Check out our sponsors. There's lots of great stuff there for you. Lots of interesting products, CBD products, gummies, edibles, vapes, whatever you need. There's all sorts of things. You need a new pair of glasses. Just enter your prescription and get them cheaper than you do at any store. There's our food prep program through goodfood.ca, makegoodfood.ca, which is absolutely terrific. We have all kinds of great sponsors on there. Please go check them out. We have more coming as of next week. And also go to our shop, buy some merchandise, like my snazzy new hat that I got here. There's all sorts of different designs. More designs are coming. Pick them up and help us to keep this show on the air. Thank you so much. On behalf of my bro Danny O and the one and only Notorious T.I.D., don't forget to go to the GoFundMe page and send a few bucks to the Tidwell family, please. And thank you so much. My name is Donnie DeSilva. This is episode 30, and we are done this party. What are we going out on, Dan?
Born to Be, the Big Sprox remix. This is my anti-Trump pro-equality anthem. Remixed on the new Lockdown Remixes project.
Dunno, we'll see you next week.
All right, peace, y'all.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people. I love the old days. You know what they used to do to guys like that when they were in a place like this? They'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks.
I wrote this on the eve of Trump's inauguration and felt that we needed to have a conversation about why your daddy feels this is an abomination. When it was an Obama nation, I felt a calm sensation knowing that I could look you squarely in the eye, tell you that you were queen, holding you nearly as you cry, consoling you cause comments on your culture that insults you should never kill your spirit. No merit for ruthless vultures, especially our leaders perpetrating all this needless anxiety and hate and supporters who follow Jesus. You see, this world is full of creatures who look at your skin and judge you without a care of whatever's held within. But when Obama was in, there was more of a global feeling. The soul was speaking to how peace over war was more appealing. But with Trump, they're revealing a return to an elitist point of view that ceases to view all human beings as decent before being given a reason to see them as otherwise. They've always told your sisters and your brothers lies, like your darker complexion and your curly locks. Has it so there's no staircase that you could surely top? They'll never let up on having us held back. So baby, just go forth and know it's a setback. If only one thing remains like a cadaver, you will love, and you can be anything you imagine.
Up and down and lost, but never take it easy. Been down this road before. We often find a reason, but we are who we wanna be. We are, we were born to be.
A young king, but really there's no crown. Feeling so lost, like really there's no fam. Gold I was sold by leaders, that's how I sound. I could get my own, but really you taking ours. I'm breaking vows, faking lies. Kids playing and they came to cops, wishing they could put them all away to rot. Handcuffed to a rail, losing time in a lonely cell. Single father never talks to his son, only yells. Mother America treat him like an estranged child. Into the whole world, he's been doing well. Look at this hell, conditions are ill. Lie to my face, then you tell me it's real. Man, votes never count in the places we. Well, a little insight and you can see for yourself. When we talk about a thug, only image expelled is in the city as. Never a suit and tie sitting at a desk. Bury the nooses, how can you get your breath? Carry the deuce of five just to get some rest. Still can't find peace, guess that my only hope's red love on beast.
Be up and down the lungs, but never take it easy. Been down this road before, we often find a reason. But we are who we wanna be. What we are, we were born to be.
Black boy being born with a
pressure. 8 pounds, 12 inches long, you were measured. Growing up in the hood, couldn't have it better. Raised by your mom and dad, we were both together. I'm amazed every day that you age. I'm afraid of you going from a playpen to a cage. Nowadays, it's fatal when the way that you behave go from cribs to a cell or a cradle to a grave. Laws intended and invented to add years to men in the pen sentence with skin tinted. There's prejudice and evidence and incentive to suffer because the color of your skin printed. On your back, there's a bullseye. Just in case you have a day in court, have a suit with a good tie. Half your mom, half me, you belong to me. Be who you was born to be, a star.
Be up and down and lost, but never take it easily.